This is Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk, and I'm here in studio with Charlie Deist. He is a volunteer for the San Francisco Sailing Science Center. Charlie, tell us a little bit about what fascinates you about sailing and science and why you volunteer.
Well, first it was the sailing. The science was the area that I felt like I had the most room for improvement. I'm a media guy myself. I've been producing radio and podcasts for several years. So when I met Jim, I saw two opportunities. One was to use some of my skills in that department, but also to bolster some of my own knowledge and resources around the science of this activity that I've come to really love as my primary hobby and also an avocation.
Jim, you're referring to is James Hancock, who's the founder of the San Francisco Sailing Science Center. Tell me a little bit about your own sailing experience. I know you have a couple of boats. You're out there on the water a lot. You teach, you sail, you just really enjoy the water. What is it about the nature and the physics of nature that really fascinates you the most when you're in the sailor role?
Well, I was a beginner not too long ago. About 10 years ago, in my early 20s, I started sailing. And as most beginners to the sport of sailing, I had my fair share of missteps, and I was humbled by San Francisco Bay more than a few times. But eventually, with practice and just taking every opportunity that I could to get out on my own boats, on other people's boats, I started to get my bearings. And you get this sort of intuitive sense of how the waves and the wind interact. But having a scientific understanding of it, I think just kind of takes it to the next level. The day that I first met Jim and learned about the Sailing Science Center, I had sailed over from Berkeley on my Columbia 24 to the St. Francis Yacht Club, which hosts their Wednesday yachting luncheons. I think that was a typical summer day in San Francisco, so winds blowing 20 knots or so. Fortunately, I think that it was flooding at the time. When the westerly winds clash with the ebb tide, it can lead to a pretty nasty surf there. But it was a good day for sailing, and it turned out to be a good day for my own kind of personal development.
Well, and for those who know anything about the moon and tides, we have a flood and an ebb twice a day. Floods coming through the Golden Gate right there in St. Francis Yacht Club.
It's kind of a funny balance because the flood, on the one hand, it creates better conditions when combined with the westerly winds. Although if you're trying to get from Berkeley heading east toward against the flood, basically, it slows you down. So there's all these trade-offs. And learning to sort of sync up with the tides and currents, I think, has also been almost a spiritual thing for me. It's a way to connect to nature on a level that most people just aren't used to thinking about.
I really appreciate you coming and sharing your story with us, and hope to have you back, Charlie. Thank you so much. This is Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk.
All right. Thank you for that. And welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you. And it is 40 after the first hour on a Tuesday. This is when we check in. And I have a co-host for this segment from SailSportTalk.com, Karen Lyle. How you doing, Karen?
I'm doing just great, Rick. How are you?
Not too bad. Let's bring in our guest. It's Nathan Siegel. He's a documentary filmmaker and the co-founder of ONA, a production company that makes films about the ocean. And he has a film being featured in the Ocean Film Festival. I don't know what the name of the film is. Nathan, can you tell us about it?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show. The film is called Open Ocean, and it follows Catalan firefighter and ocean sailor Didac Costa as him and his ragtag team, which I say lovingly, attempt to tackle arguably the greatest race in sailing and one of the most extreme sporting events on earth, the Vendée Globe, which is the solo nonstop race around the world.
Nathan, we covered the Vendée Globe during this last year. I was accredited media, and so I talked to many of the different sailors, Pip Hare and others, as did my co-host Rick here. Why did you choose this particular sailor to do your documentary about?
It was I think the film almost chose us. I run a company called ONA that does communication for the sea, and we actually were running the communication for Didac, and so it was more of a commercial project for us. But the longer that I was along inside the project, and really the longer that I was around DDAC, I just felt this this pull towards the project, towards the idea, and towards DDAC as a personality. I think among big sporting figures, it's rare to find someone as humble, as down to earth, and almost as unassuming as DDAC, and that really drew me in to the story.
Yeah, about 15 years ago or so, I remember I would have Bruce Schwab, the American, who was in the Vendée, and he would call in once a week and by satellite phone, and he had good days and bad days. But what about the mental aspect of the privations of being out there by yourself that long, all alone?
You know, I can't even imagine. I have a sailboat, and if I go out for a few days, you know, I'm already talking to myself and going a bit loopy. So, you know, I can't imagine what it's like to be out there for 3 months, and, you know, not just alone, but sleep deprived, tired, cold. You're in the Southern Ocean, so the fatigue and the physical stress must be incredible. And, you know, on top of that, just trying to race. You know, not just trying to survive, but trying to race as hard as possible. So, you know, I personally couldn't talk to it, but I think it requires a certain type of person to do that type of race. And, you know, a lot of the friends and family that I talked to of DDAC say that he, you know, he just has that personality of a solo sailor. So I wonder if there is a part of it that's just ingrained, that's just part of someone.
This is quite a story, and I watched the trailer on the website for this, and this is being featured in the International Ocean Film Festival. I understand that you worked as a video and photojournalist in East Africa covering environmental issues for publications like The Guardian, CNN, and BBC. What brought you over to the Vendée Globe?
So I was I was working previously as a documentary photographer and filmmaker, and you know what I really was what I was really interested in, it was telling stories for a longer period of time. When you're working in news, it's often tough to spend more than a few days or a week on a story, and that's what drew me into documentary in the first place. And I've always been really attracted to and spent a lot of my time in the ocean. And so that's why I started this company, was looking to make films about the ocean. And honestly, I was not in the sailing world at all. You know, I went sailing a few times with my dad when I was younger, but really I was mostly preoccupied about getting back to, you know, hanging out with my friends. I wasn't really interested in sailing. And so when this project came up, you know, I was really an outsider coming into this world. And, you know, I think that allowed me to see the film and see the story from an outsider's perspective and think about what was interesting in it and in DDAC in a more universal way.
A couple more questions for filmmaker Nathan Siegel about his film Open Ocean. A two-part question. Tell us about the lightning strike, and then also, did he run into a whale or did the whale run into him?
You know, for the second, I think we'd have to track down the whale to ask, but I'm sure that DDAC ran into the whale. Yes. Regarding the first question, you know, so much of the obstacles and setbacks that DDAC faced were financial. You know, they were basically broke the entire time. He's done this race twice now, and both editions, you know, mounting personal debt, and you know, so you can imagine the really fine line that this project was walking financially. And then about a week or two before they were going to France to start the race, a lightning strike hit the mast of the boat and basically fried all the electronics. And you know, DDAC has kind of suffered a few of these cruel twists of fate, but this I think was a particularly tough one, and catalyzed a sprint of the team trying to beg for money and you know, ask for old equipment from other teams and just trying to cobble together what they could for the start of the race.
Well, you were covering the other boats as well, I guess, in your commercial capacity during the Vendée Globe, if I understand what you said correctly. There was quite a bit of camaraderie among the racers, especially in a rescue that happened during the race, where, you know, if somebody gets in danger, then others come to help if can. And can you speak to that?
Sure, I think, you know, it is a race, but in a way, the challenge isn't against the other racers as much as the other sailors, as much as it is against the ocean. I mean, I think ocean sailing is very much like mountaineering in that sense, where you know, sure, you're trying to make a first ascent, but you're out there in challenge of the elements. And you know, I think that the first priority is the safety of the sailors and the safety of your competitors and your friends. So when the boat of Kevin Escoffier, a French sailor, basically broke in half, and he had a few seconds to send a text message to his team, where you know, his text auto corrected to say "Layday." You know, they sent the racers that were around to go find him. You know, he's so far offshore that really his other racers, who were alone on a 60-foot boat, you know, in a storm conditions, those are really his best chance at being rescued, and that's what happened. John Le Cam was able to pick him up after you know 12, I think it was like 12 to 18 hours of Kevin in the life raft, and I think that it's those types of moments that make this race so compelling, that it's really a human endeavor, not just a sporting event.
What is the finish rate? I know it's less than 50%, right?
I think, you know, it changes year by year, but it's around 50%. It's around 50%. And, you know, now that the boats are getting newer and they're pushing the limits of what you can, what these boats can do, they're becoming lighter and faster. I think that it's pretty easy to break. And you know, it's 3 months and in extremely difficult conditions. And yeah, it's certainly not more than 50% finish the race.
Well, you're calling us from Barcelona, and I was there just before the pandemic. How is it in Barcelona right now?
In regards to the pandemic, you mean?
You know, just the weather. You know, what the cult. You know, how people are doing. Just you know, just anything along that line.
Sure. You know, Barcelona is a pretty outdoor city, so you know, even though there's restrictions in terms of restaurants, it's always a pretty lively outdoor city, and there's quite a bit of sailing. I think we're expecting a storm to come in next week, so I think my sailing plans are on hold. But it's certainly not a rough winter to survive over here.
How close are you? What percentage of you wants to do the Vendée yourself?
You know, I think there's certain moments where I'm like, yeah, I should definitely do this. And then, you know, I get the footage back and I see the footage and I think, yeah, I'm not, you know, there's probably 2% of me. And I think in some ways, maybe that's what, for a general audience, that's what makes these types of stories so interesting. You know, something like Free Solo or a race like the Vendée Globe, where there's a small percentage of everyone who thinks like, man, I wonder if I could do this. And I think the answer for me at least is no, I definitely couldn't.
Well, you're coming to San Francisco very shortly for the International Ocean Film Festival. So we've put up a page at Sail Sport Talk that has a link to your trailer and how people can see it, both virtually if they're anywhere in the world, and also I guess you're going to be speaking, is that right?
I'm not totally sure about the event schedule, but I'll definitely be in San Francisco, and you know, it'd be great to be in touch with the sailing community there.
What would you say for the someone listening who says, oh, I want to do the Vendée? What is the one thing that you can't live without outside of, you know, a compass and a satellite phone? Maybe a underestimated little piece of equipment that you would need.
Oh man, that's a good question. You know, the thing I would say, the underestimated piece of equipment. I think the moments that are really important, because you're eating dehydrated food the entire time to save weight. And so there are these moments where, you know, for Didac, we packed some jamon, we packed, you know, a little bit of wine. And I think that breaking up that monotony of the food and also just kind of giving you a little bit of boost of energy, I think mentally more than anything really helps.
So what I'm hearing is the wine, right?
think it's the wine. Yep, you know, you can throw yep. overboard your autopilot as long as you have your wine.
All right, there is Nathan Siegel, film Open Ocean, as we were just mentioning. Make sure that you check that out. It's going to be part of the Ocean Film Festival. Nathan Siegel, thank you so much for coming by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And Karen,
and
as all.
Why didn't you? You should have Nathan stop by and sign our celebrity wall, too.
Absolutely. Anytime. Karen, good checking in with you again, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, we'll see you then.
All right, I'm Rick Tittle. Let's take a break. We'll come on back with the sports talk.